and this was just me, but I'm pretty sure like half of my science existence in like junior high was just pen, Bunsen burner.
Bunsen burning. Bunsen burner misuse. Oh boy.
Very light misuse, but I'm sure my entire class, like everybody had these weird bulbous misshapen pens at like the back end. I have to assume that's universal, though. I don't think that gets beaten out of people.
No, that feels like human nature.
It looks cool. Ugly plastic is neat. Probably not good for you. Player 2 Pixelcast, episode 189, and I swear to God that everything is fine. Nothing's on fire. In fact, it's raining outside. Right now, like just a little bit. A little bit of rain is going to put it all, it's going to put out all the disasters. Yeah, I'm your host, Tim Henderson. I'm definitely like crying into a mug of beer. That's true. I have a bottle of water. Metaphorically, though, I do have a mug of beer in front of me. And, Rob, how are you feeling?
Everything is just fine. There's no ash, there's no ruined wasteland around us.
Yeah, I guess it really should just be a mug of black coffee and I should look like a dog, I think, is where we're at. Like,
yeah, I just finished my tea and I was tea black as my heart.
Yeah, just one of the most evergreen memes. If there's any justice in that world under capitalist society, that guy would be a multimillionaire by now for like coming up with that. But yes, in case this podcast is the like only source of video game information that you get every fortnight, shit is bad right now. I had wanted to have a bit of fun and just talk, like, just try and rank video game pirates. Just do some dumb who is the best pirate in video game thing for two reasons. One, Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, Remaster or Resync or whatever they're calling it just came out. Problem there because the guy who reviewed it is off camping. Didn't bring a laptop with him. But also, too, everything is falling apart. Like, the amount of bad news that happened since we recorded the last episode is like, yeah, it feels glib to try and ignore it. So I am, yeah, sorry if you're looking for a Happy Games podcast. And I don't mean just looking for it in us. I feel like everything that has come out in the last week and a half has probably been focused on Sony and Sony, like, doing bad, and then Microsoft doing, like, hold my beer, whiskey, Kahlua, and gin tonic all at the same time.
Jet fuel.
Oh. Before that, though, you know, there are games still do come out, though, and sometimes they're fun, and sometimes they're shmups, because, you know, Rob's here.
Yes. This was a grab in the Steam sale, because I haven't been in buying things in those for a while, but Resurfaced.
You've got a deck now. You can enjoy it again.
Yeah. There's one I grabbed in the last sale. It's unsurprisingly a remake of an Amiga game from, you know, from 30 odd years ago. And I really like what they've done with it. Like, I'll admit, I haven't played a massive amount of the original game. I actually have the copy of its C64 conversion in my collection, but not the
original game being the difficult to pronounce X out resurface, which I'm saying clearly now because I definitely did not talk over you the first time that you said the title of the game.
Yeah. So X out resurfaced is a remake of X out, which is, like I said, an Amiga game from about 1990. It's a horizontally scrolling shooter. The big thing is it's set under the water. So you're flying little,
a submarine?
No, it's like it's not a sub. It's a, like, it looks like a fighter craft. I don't know. The big hook with it is, unlike a lot of other shooters, you don't have power ups or anything to collect. Instead, what happens is when you start the game, you have a bunch of money and you build out like your ships. So you've got like 10,000 credits or whatever. You build a ship, you stick weapons on it, and you build as many you can as afford because they're your lives. And then you go into battle and you fight through enemies. Dodge bullets, try not to die. Unlike most shooters, you have an energy bar for each ship, so you can take a few hits before you blow up. But if you collide into stuff, you'll take a lot of damage. You might die straight away if it's like scenery. If it's a ship, you'll take energy hits.
But it's not guaranteed, because
it's not guaranteed. So there's sort of that. And that makes sense, because you might, if you think you're better than you actually are, you might go all out and spend all your money kitting out one ship with a massive armament. And then if you die, it's game over. There's no continues or anything like that. Or you do what I do, which is buy like three ships with pretty weak armament and try to survive. I've made it to the second stage. I'm not particularly great at it. But then when you complete a stage, you've got more money. So if you've got more money, you can upgrade your ships or buy new ones to replenish your lives.
Okay, how aggressively does it like increase the prices of armor and ship between stages? Because like, this is generally a problem I found. It's like, oh, I got so much more money this time. Oh, everything costs three times as much.
So basically, again, I've not played enough to really understand the system. But if you go back and you buy like the same level one stuff, it's still the same price. Tiers are more expensive. But if you were to, like, if you went through, as I've done, I've basically been on my last ship, beaten stage one, gotten to stage two, and I've just rebought. I've had enough to rebuy, like, another ship with base arms. And that's sort of the same. It doesn't really, like, if you're buying that base stuff again, the price hasn't gone up.
All right. So it just scales with, well, you want the next level of power, that's going to cost proportionately
more. Yeah. And I haven't played far enough to actually take advantage of it. But one of the things I really like is they've gone for this, like, the 2D, it's still a 2D pixel art look, just at a higher resolution, so a little more detail.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on Steam now, and it's...
Like, one of the things is watching, like, the opening intro sequence when the game boots up, it's, like, higher quality version of the original thing. It's got, like, some garbled speech that I don't understand in there. So they've really gone to town on getting like the right people to work on the music and the visuals. I believe there are some people involved. Part of it's a tribute to like the original artist involved who passed away. Oof. But there's one stupid thing that I love, that if you are old like me and you grew up on the Amiga and stuff, you start the game up and the first screen you get is like a faux crack intro with like, so on those games, when you had like a crack copy of the game, they'd usually install cheats. And so you sit there and you have a screen with like unlimited lives, unlimited energy and all of this, unlimited money. And you have to, it looks like you have to unlock that through play, but it has this crack intro screen with a scrolling message. It's just like, oh.
And that's a nice little wink of if you know, if you know.
If you know, you know, yeah. And then the game starts up. Like I said, I picked this up because it was on sale. And I definitely think it was worth that. It's really nicely
like
done.
$20 off sale, I think. Yeah, I'm trying to calculate the Japanese yen to Australian dollars at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to say $20-$25, depending on local pricing.
Yeah. And I think, like, if you're really into that era of stuff, because a lot of shooter fans go for more Japanese fare. A lot of them don't like, they derogatively slam European produced stuff. Obviously, for me, with like more of a home computer upbringing with stuff that was big in Europe, this kind of stuff is kind of my fare. So I was willing to have paid the full price, and I probably would have been happy to, but it was on sale. So I grabbed and been having a,
why
been
wouldn't you? You're a consumer.
Yeah.
I will say though, looking at the screens, cause I've had some mixed feelings about the visual design and some, cause you've been playing a lot of remasters and remakes of like shmups this year.
Yeah.
And I've had some mixed feelings about the visual design of some of them. This one looks really, really nice. So it is like, just if a Mega Drive had enough of a color palette to do gradients properly is the way I'm thinking of it.
I mean, at its peak, like during the glory days of the Amiga, the highest video mode was 32 colors. So 320 by 200, 256 with 32 colors. And then later Amiga models had 256 colors, but the PC was sort of dominating by that point when those machines came out just before Commodore imploded. So going from like you could do a lot with 32 colors, like 32 out of 4,000, and I presume this has got true color because, you know, it's modern hardware. And, yeah, they've sort of stuck faithfully to that style. But just, you know, high resolution, giving a little more detail and a bit wider color palette.
And it actually looks really nice, and not all of these have, so.
Yeah, I think you have to do a lot of, like, you have to be appreciative of the hardware limitations, both of the original system but also of modern stuff, to just really take advantage of it. And don't just blindly apply filters or whatever on existing assets. Like, it looks like they had a proper artist redraw everything to sort of fit.
Yeah, it pays off. I'd be surprised if they hadn't. Like, if they had written a filter to do this, then I, you know what? Okay, you got me, bravo.
Yeah. I mean, because obviously, because the full thing plays out in like a full 16:9. The original game was, you know, obviously 4:3. So it's expanded out and uses that whole play area.
Yeah, I imagine that helps playability as well.
Yeah, it usually does. At least, and it's helped here, and it's helped in other shooters I've played that have gone widescreen. But yeah, definitely recommended.
On the, like, are we on a tier list of all the shmups you've played in the last year? Like, is this like around the middle? Is it higher? I'm guessing it sounds like it's in the higher end, but
it's definitely like I'd definitely be putting B rank. Like, I'd probably say Earthion was A rank. Project X would be B rank. The Salamander 3, which is part of the Gradius Origins, is probably A rank. M2's Salamander sequel, it's in the big Gradius collection that Konami put out last year. Trying to think what other ones.
Anything be D rank? We gotta know you throw anything under the bus here.
Oh, not off the top of my head, at least recent stuff.
There you go. In general rule, games are good. Let people make them.
Let people make them. Give them the support they need to be able to pull them off, and don't, you know, throw them under the bus the first sign of the first week after release.
Yeah. You know, it's a shame. It really is a shame that that expression is not throw them under the train, because that would have given me like a nice, like, super smooth segue. Because I've had like the longest lead time I've had to write a review I've had in like a long time, but I've been playing Denture Attack for like the last 2 weeks.
Ah, yes. I think I've heard of this one.
Yeah, like it's easy to understand looking at it and very difficult to describe straight off. But you'd like, you see the trend, you're like, okay, that's like Jet Set Radio meets Sonic the Hedgehog meets maybe Katamari meets maybe some sort of skateboarding trick game. I don't know. It is super, like, hyper-colored. One of the most pure examples of cell shading I think I've seen. But the basic premise is, maybe the premise will help, that this is somewhere in the future, post-climate disaster Japan, although for some reason it's not all underwater. But a lot of the cities and, like, the actual communities are now, like, domed. And, like, just one giant corporation has, you know, kind of, and, like, most of the population lives in those now. But you're a person who lives on the outside, and you've inherited what they call is a train, and I've gone way too far down a rabbit hole here. Because most of the time you're not actually, because train is like a chain of things. I went way too far down this rabbit hole. One, this and then with something else I might get into as well. Is a train, like, you know, a conga line is a train. Sushi, we call rotation sushi a train because it's like a ding, ding, ding. But you're really just in the locomotive engine. There are no cars behind you. Which is very, very anal on my end. But they say train all the time. And I got really caught up in the name because in English it's a portmanteau. It's like Denture Attack and they've like slammed the words together. But they've got Denture written in kanji and then Attack written in katakana below, and it's not a portmanteau, even though Japan fucking loves itself a portmanteau and like half the words in the language get slammed together. Famicom, I think is an example I put in the review, being family computer smashed together. If you want to go to Family Mart, that's still a funny name for my shop. They just call it Family Mart. McDonald's, McWiddle. Like it's literally... I don't do that. I'm going down this whole rabbit hole speaking to people trying to find out, like, is the word Densha, which in Japan just translates to train, does that actually refer to the engine car, or does it, like, mean all the things stacked together? And I haven't been able to get a proper answer, but as far as I can tell, I think it does mean, like, you know, the snake effect. So all these trains, and there are no actual fucking trains in most of the game. Very unimportant. But I went down that rabbit hole, and I want people to know.
I endorse going down rabbit holes.
Yeah. So it begins with you in this train that's not really a train because it's just a front car, so you can call it the engine or the locomotive, just delivering ramen at speed to some person who ordered ramen, and for some reason you own this one front car locomotive, and opening tutorial, okay, you need to hold the brake because you are going around those corners really fast, and you'll either go around them faster if you do it correctly or fly off the edge if you don't do it at all. I think you learn to jump in the tutorial as well. And like jump between tracks, you get there. You and I. This is something I really appreciate about this game. It starts. It basically goes south to north, and the only sad thing is it kind of ignores Okinawa. But it starts like at the bottom of Kyushu, being the southernmost island of Japan. Something I've been having a bit of trouble with writing the review is for me like basic Japanese geography is very assumed knowledge, and I have to remember that I'm writing for an Australian site, so maybe it's not. So the southernmost and. You're in a small city called Oita, which nobody, it's kind of famous for hot springs, but nobody in Australia or the West is really aware. It's Beppu City, Oita Prefecture. But I went way too far down. So you're delivering, and the first mission is called Hot Ramen Delivery. And you go and deliver it, and I notice it's like, oh, this is like thick black soup when you see this picture of the guy who gets it actually eating it. And go, that's interesting. Because Kyushu in particular is famous for tonkotsu, which is the bone broth. ramen, which is more of a pale, kind of frothy, thick soup. And went down this whole rabbit hole. I learned about beppu ramen. Ramen, though, is cold noodles. You're delivering hot noodles. I got way too caught up with the fact that I missed a trick there. And they say hot ramen so many times in the course of the game. And it's, again, super important, but this game does so well at, like, not just going, here are the big sites in Osaka, Kyoto, Yokohama, and Tokyo. Like, it really goes out of its way to do that. And I feel like I just missed this trick super early on. It's like, you should have just, like, Beppu has nothing else going for it, man. Let them have their cold noodle dish. There's some kimchi in there, so it's actually kind of like half a Korean food. So yeah, I've spent way too much time obsessing over that, which is why, even though I had a huge amount of lead time for the review, I spent like the last day trying to cull it from 4 pages to 3 because it's like, I've got too much junk on this page. But it's also this weird thing where, like, it's a mechanics forward game. It's like just perpetual motion, tricks, dodge obstacles, keep going. But it does actually do a pretty good job of like establishing its very ridiculous lore, and it should be ridiculous. I mean, everything that's happening in the world is ridiculous, and this is a game about like driving trains on what really the stages feel like just somebody just picked up a bunch of, I don't know, I've forgotten the word, slot car tracks, and like threw them up in the air. All right, that's your track, make it work. And it's kind of awesome because of that. Like, it's just like, go forward at speed. You do have a break, but technically you only ever do that to go faster around the corner. Or on some stages when there are like multiple objectives, and if you want the stage to end, you kind of like stop. But it's basically go fast, like non-stop, in a way that I guess a modern Sonic game would be. But like the rails split off in different things. You are grinding on like what feel like roller coaster tracks half the time. It is very, very normal to like be jumping up and like sliding along billboards and like jumping between them. And at some point you're like, oh, now I'm like just sliding across a waterfall as well. And now there's a Ferris wheel chasing me, and now I've detached from the tracks entirely, and I'm like looping the loop around inside of like a sewer tunnel. It's great.
I presume the skies are very blue.
Oh, it is. Like, it has a very similar, it's enough its own thing, but it's clearly taking something from the original Jet Set Radio for its visual energy. And it 100% works. And I think it, aside from like looking cool, like I appreciate how pure a display, like this is just cell shading and cell shading. And it has that kind of, it's interesting though, because it has that kind of turn of the century, like energy and optimism that like you had in some of those like late Sega games before they like stopped making hardware. Even though it is now 2026, everything is garbage, and this game is set technically post-apocalypse.
So I'll look at our upcoming future then.
Yeah, but I mean, the bright colors, I think, help. Like, I described it, well, I mean, the review's not quite finished. I may tweak a couple of things yet, because I have a couple of days before, like, the embargo. But I, at present, at least, I've kind of described it as kind of, like, mechanically, this game is surprisingly tight for, like, I forgot the name of the, like, it's not an unknown studio or a studio, like, it's not a first-time studio. I've forgotten the name of the moment, which is a bit of a shame. But it is shockingly polished for, like, what it is and, like the amount of shit going on. And I feel like they hit this kind of mechanical, uncanny valley, I'm calling it. Like, the closer you get to, like, making it perfect, the more these tiny little cracks and imperfections kind of, like, jump out at you. So that, everything being, like, hyper bright and, like, super easy, like, just super simple cell shading helps, because you need that readability, because you're going super fast. Like, it needs to be super clear, this is that. And very occasionally, like, oh, shit. Especially the first time through. You're like, oh, I'm not sure if I thought that was something I was supposed to smash through and I was supposed to jump over it. That can happen occasionally. It's been patched since. I had one or two moments where, like, I could swear, like, the stick movements to, like, just do tricks. Because you can just flip the train around in the air. Like, there are multiple cases where the tracks will also go up and becomes, like, you leave one set of tracks and you come down another, like, it's a skating half pipe almost. I had one or two moments where I could swear the train just did not respond to me flicking sticks. Oof. But it's, like, hasn't happened recently, and there have been a couple of patches since. But it definitely wasn't my fault first, because I was playing on a PC. Played it on the ROG Ally, and it's like, okay, I have been saying for a while now, I need a new PC controller. I'm just going to go out and buy one. It was still like, I've tried this on multiple controller setups, and that was the thing, but it seems like it's tighter there now in a regard, but like, it's so close to being like mechanically perfectly pulled off. The only thing I can't really criticize it on, and this is something that's going to require time, is like how well judged are the criteria for hitting high scores in the various categories? Because it's like you basically get bronze, silver, gold, or no medals in the basis on, you know, score, like how many tricks did you pull off? How long did you hold the chain for? Time, which is tied pretty closely, not entirely, but pretty closely to did you crash it all? It reboots really, really fast, though. Like, it's, at least on modern hardware, I mean, everything has an SSD now, it helps, but, like, it's designed to just be, like, somebody just says, gumbat it, and then, boom, you're, like, just back at the last checkpoint. It's, like, almost instantaneous. And then what they call dares, I want to say, which is just, like, the challenges, which is, you know, pick up the 3X or, like, hit 5 of Y on the track type things. And things I don't care about scores, but what I do like is like going back again, like hitting, like when you get better at it and you're familiar and you like kind of just hit that flow state, like getting that proper neat run, just don't care if I get a gold medal or not, but it just feels really good once it's going.
Yep.
Some wild, almost, I'll speak to you during the break, is some stuff I maybe shouldn't be saying on the actual show, some wildly clever boss battles in there. They have shown off the first one, so I felt safe saying you do battle giant robots. Which, but like, they're all like super cleverly done. Like, the main thing is, this is not a game. This is a game you play with coffee. It's not a game you play with beer. I think it's not the first thing I've said, the first game I've described about, and it's like that this year either. Like, it's better to be locked in. Like, you need to like have a certain amount of alertness. Multiple runs help. It's, it can feel very nerve wracking for some round, although most of the tracks are like fairly forgiving. Like, if you just keep playing and get to the end, you're done. There's only a small handful that are like, no, you need to like achieve X tricks or like do enough to like get this many points or finish in a certain time. Like, literally just a handful that actually like require that of you. Surprisingly, in that regard, decent amount of content. Like, I want to say it's like just about 9 hours if you just play it end to end without going back. Play it. It's hard for me to judge that. No, I'm putting it as close to now. It's hard for me to judge that because, okay, I've been playing it and then suddenly I'm like, hey, can you get me some coffee? Or I get up, go from the PC, make somebody a cup of coffee. And come back. It's like, wait, did I want to take notes in that? Like, I may have gone back to like one track one or two times, but it feels like it's pretty close to like a 9 hour thing, which is pretty substantial for like a very arcadey balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Nonstop thing. And it's partly because they do a very good job with the lore. And it, yeah, lore is silly. That doesn't mean it's not good. But basically, the guy you're delivering the ramen to, your character is just like, everybody in this game is an attitude. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go. All the time. Like, so he's like, hey, are you indenture attack? And you being Emmy, this dude girl's like, no, what's that? I was just trying to deliver the ramen really fast. Like, this is Crazy Taxi, but with, you know, train tracks. and it's just instantly she just accepts that like people just racing trains in insanely dangerous situations is like a normal thing in this world, and then she very quickly just becomes like the best in every prefecture she goes through. That he follows her around, he basically like, okay, I'll introduce you to these people if you let me follow you around and take pictures, and he's basically working on a fanzine, which is a very simple but elegant way to like deal with the fact that, okay, we have these characters and these gangs, we want the lore there, and we, like, there is a reason this world is like this. It's not super deep, but it's also deeper than it needs to be for this type of game, and it's more interesting than it probably you should deserve it than you deserve to expect it to be, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And it just means like you kind of just progress on over map. And sometimes you like just can visit the HQ in that prefecture or that region of where the fanzine is being distributed by this cute little robot thing, and just kind of like fill it out and like just read at your leisure if you want to, or ignore it if you don't, which is a very simple but very smart way to say it's there if you want it. We have found a way to frame it in that way. But if you just want to race this, go. The only real downside there is like, I do think this game's bread and butter is going to be people finding their favorite tracks and like doing them again and like just probably going to be some amazing YouTube videos of this game if it takes off.
But I presume there's a leaderboard system for the runs, like online.
Not super sure. I would presume so, but like I've just sent my Steam profile to Secret while I've been playing this.
Fair enough.
I presume that has to be coming, but I should maybe go into the menus again just to like double, triple, quadruple check is like, because once you progress through the map and you go up and down, you can kind of go back to things. But every time you do that, you kind of get the introductory dialogue and everything again. It's like they need to insert a thing that's just like, here are just the tracks, just go. Especially with obviously it tutorializes and it's a lot to take in at once. It's like, because you'll learn, all right, here are a few tricks, go do a couple of levels. Okay, here's something new. A couple more here, a couple more new things. They need to like just have a list of tracks and just go, and all of the skill set is open from the get-go. Like, that, it's strange to me that that is missing.
Yeah, like, I would have expected something like to be a progressive unlock. As you're moving to each region and completing stuff, that stuff then gets available in a separate mode or something.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back as much as you like, but I would expect it wouldn't be too hard for them to, like, patch in, like, a menu system that is just, like, here are all the tracks in Kyushu, here are all the tracks in Chubu, here are the tracks on Shikoku, whatever. Because it is still, like, it is, again, though, more polished than I really would have expected for something like this. I think they've done a very good job. The energy is there. It's super fun way of playing it. It is definitely a burst game. You play this for, like, half an hour to an hour, and you're like, okay, I'm done.
Yep.
Except I do think there is a very specific person, or there is a specific type of person for whom this is going to be their favorite game of the next year.
Yeah,
and we'll be able to play it obsessively.
Yeah, I can definitely see that from what you've been telling me so far. Yeah.
And I do believe there is a demo on this. I've been playing on PC, but I do believe there's also a demo on the Switch too, if you want to like give that a go first. And you know, honestly, I would recommend everybody give it a go. If it's not your thing, it's not your thing, but it is at least worth a look. It has an energy to it that I feel like we have not seen in a while.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah, it is. When we desperately need good things. And with that, I also desperately need a glass of water. So when we come back, the happy times are over. Back, and yeah, the world did not fix itself in the 10 minutes I spent getting a bottle of water.
Yeah,
things are bad. I'm looking down at my new PC and realizing it's partly my fault. This, I did not get a Blu-ray drive this time around. Which I still haven't gotten rid of, and at this point, if I hold onto it long enough, even the DDR3 in that may actually pay itself off.
Oh, like I've been cusping for upgrades for a while now, but obvious circumstances have made planning that impossible, especially because I've got the PC tower and my Mac for upgrading. And now it's like one of the gap is much smaller in terms of upgrading, because I need the Mac for my video stuff and my life.
Yeah, I got very lucky getting this thing in October last year. I did not realize like how close I was to the abyss. Had I waited like another couple of weeks, I could have like saved another $30 or something. But considering what happened, if I'd waited another couple of months, woof.
Yep.
But that, we've already gone into why that is garbage, and that is still garbage. Nobody can afford RAM. Nobody can afford storage. It's ruining everything. But more to the point, Sony's gone, well, we want to make some more money, and we're just going to, you know, decide to like not make discs anymore.
It is such a stupid, stupid move. Like, It's a control move, right? The bit I love is they announced this in, like, I'm sure you've seen it. There's the Twitter post from them that says, we're phasing out discs and we're closing the digital store on PS3 and Vita.
It was a side by side
in the same social media post.
And this was like a week after, and this is something that is actually questionably legally questionable to my understanding, but having spoken to people who understand it better than I am. The problem is that no law firm is going to go after a company this big, because they do not, if they don't do work with Sony, they do work with companies like Sony, and that's going to create them problems down the line. Deleted movies. Yeah. Didn't remove them from sale, which happens the same sometimes, and it sucks. But you know, if you bought the game, and it will be in your library forever. No, like they literally just reached in. It, The equivalent of like breaking into somebody's home and stealing a DVD and running away again, minus the footprints.
You should, like, if they had to, if their license reservation had meant they had to do that, people should be compensated, and they haven't. And this is the problem. Like, you can't push an all digital solution if you cannot reliably guarantee people's purchases, right? If they want to push an all digital future and they're not going to be able to guarantee that, digital should be significantly cheaper because it's glorified rental.
There's going to be a lawsuit at some point, but here's the thing though. Like the reason, the real reason, oh my gosh, I'm starting to sound like Alex Jones, but the real reason they're getting rid of hard copies of the play, the thing that actually gets me is that like they're not even like making a stop with PS6. They're just stopping when this is going to affect a lot of PS5 games.
Hmm.
But the real reason they're doing this is they control the pricing on PSN. Like there is no, like, I worked retail during the PS3 era, and like game would come out, the suggested retail price would be £45-50, the supply cost would be £35, and then immediately Sony's only getting £35 versus the full price. But also then, like, none of the actual physical retails are selling it for the full 50 unless it's Call of Duty, because they're competing with each other and you're going to get somewhere from the £40 to £45 range. That is gone. Like, you want this game, you will pay what we tell you to pay. And I feel like if this actually does go through, we're going to be at the mercy of Legon. Would the European Union please come to save us and like force them to allow multiple storefronts on the PSN? Because that is the one thing. So multiple storefronts instead of the PSN. That is the one thing that will make Sony suddenly go, oh, wait, printing discs isn't that expensive. Maybe we should.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it is ridiculous. Because, it's a very, very, like, blatant act of control. And, like, obviously, you know, they can make more money from a digital sale than they ever could on a physical one. But at the same time, I guess that means, but it's all of this control stuff. And it's just like, how do you, just also the reliability of how do you even trust those purchases? Like,
or even right in now, first world nations or parts of Australia, probably decently significant parts that don't have super great internet access.
I mean, I have good internet, but I still just sit there waiting ages to download stuff. Like, I mean, a 100 megabit connection, still waiting ages to download stuff when I'm installing it on the PS. Like, it's so backwards. Like, and then, I'm angry at it from a control angle. I'm angry at it from a pricing angle. I'm angry at it from a preservation angle, because we're just going to lose so much down the line. The bit that's funny is that within like a week, people are already writing PS5 equivalents of like Proton for SteamOS, but for the PS5, so that you can run your PS5 stuff.
Motivated some people, you would think.
It's motivated people. I love it. Spite is a beautiful motivator.
Kind of sad to put it that way. There was actually one other point that I wanted to get, because we do actually, the weird thing is, like, Microsoft came and kind of, like, buried the shit for Sony anyway.
Yeah.
But there was one other thing about this that was annoying me, and it's now escaping me, so I'm, like, talking in circles, like, kind of, like, hoping it'll come back.
The thing I love is also,
thing. I remembered. Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's basically, they came out with the notion, like, you keep on hearing that 80% sales are digital now. Figure floating around, which is probably true, but it's one of those. I was watching a dumb documentary about like people are eating too much meat. Since the 1970s, meat consumption has increased like this many fold. And I'm going, yeah, but you didn't weigh that against like the population increase of the earth as well. Like these two things go hand in hand. So, okay, all these digital sales are coming in, but like how many of those are like people buying DLC? How many of those are like indie games that just don't have a physical release to begin with? Like, if you took this data and put it 1-to-1, how significant is it really?
Yeah.
And I would wager that digital is way bigger than it was 10, 15 years ago, but I would also wager that, like, disc is way bigger than Sony wants you to know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I absolutely would agree with you on that. It's absolutely weighting the numbers to show their, to show their point of view. You know,
so I don't say games, I say purchases, which is a very careful choice of word there.
That could also be purchasing, like, media. Like,
that's if buying your shark cards for Grand Theft Auto. That's like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that, you know, X percent of statistics all wrong line off The Simpsons. Like, they're manipulating the numbers to make it look like that digital is way more popular. And digital is definitely popular, but not, I don't think, to the extent it is that they're saying it is. But I'd like to be wrong.
For what it's worth, like, I buy almost all of my games on disc. Like, for me to buy a console game, digitally at least, it either has to be a indie title that either doesn't have or only has some sort of very special limited hyper collector's version physical release, or just some wild, deep, deep sale of an old game that isn't necessarily easily available in stores anymore.
Yeah, like, I definitely find, like, the big AAA stuff I tend to buy on disc, or as most of my recent ones have been, tend to have asked for it for a present. And yeah, because, like, I'm thinking about this right now, because it's like, I'm, you know, got a note to pre-order Ace Combat 8. It's like, yeah, I've got to remember to put an order in to get that on disc because, yeah.
You have to. It's also made me wonder, like, I've noticed... So I, a couple of months ago now, bought Saros over Pragmata.
Right.
I was umming and ahhing between the two. The reason I bought Saros was that Pragmata was sold out.
Right.
And my suspicion is actually that maybe they did not print that many discs of that game in the first place, because I am not seeing secondhand copies anywhere. And that, to my understanding, is not a super long game. And normally, when they're done with that, there's a certain type of person who will just sell that thing off again, like, a couple of weeks later.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because I've seen many, but I haven't done a hard look in, like, EBs or whatever here. Now I'm curious next time I go out.
I don't know if you could ask. It would be interesting if you'd actually ask the staff, like, how many copies did you get? How long did they take to sell out? Like, how many copies of that did you get versus, like, maybe Saros or some other big thing?
Yeah. Yeah, now I'm curious.
Because there are those ways, like, just creating this illusion that, because it's like, yeah, you can get a digital one, you just do it that way. I mean, it's just $20 extra.
Yeah.
And I say just $20 extra, like, it's a joke, but it's also actually true a lot of the time. A big part of why I still buy discs is,
yeah,
not a whole lot of extra effort to, like, save a decent chunk of money.
Yeah. Like, it makes me wonder. So, like, a little history thing is, in one of the things that led to the North American crash back in the 80s was, like, Atari couldn't supply enough carts to stores. So you would say you'd want, like, X units of some game, and they would give you, like, maybe half of that allocation. So people were doing dodgy stuff to get extra allocations. And then suddenly Atari started shipping what people were asking because they'd caught up. And so they had, and because people had ordered more, they couldn't sell them.
Yeah, oops. I mean, that wouldn't happen again, just because, like, again, discs are significantly faster and cheaper to produce than cartridges. Like, that would be much, much less of a problem. I believe that was even an issue for the Nintendo 64. You were kind of, like, shooting in the dark, like, really trying to guess how many of these you could sell.
Because you had to go through Nintendo to get those cartridges made.
But anyway, that's bad enough. But yeah, like I said, Nintendo's mostly innocent at the moment. The Game Gear cards suddenly seem like an okay idea. They're not great, but...
Yeah.
Chain reaction of hold my beer.
Yeah, what I wish with the Game Gear cards was they just had the whole game on it, and it was just a slower install thing, the cartridge equivalent of a disc, but alas.
Anyway, but yeah, Microsoft really came along and said, well, yeah, we are going to, like, set the new standard
for
how to fuck everything up, and just feels so fucking... Especially after the audacity of, like... I remember we actually going into Summer Game Fest, I was always like, I had a discussion on the show, I think, with you, sort of thing. And then, like, a few weeks after, like, we learned a bunch of the shit, he's like, oh, yeah, but let's just be excited for now. And I was like, you know what, yeah, let's just enjoy some hype for now. And Summer Game Fest came in, it was actually a bit better than I expected. And then they just fucking pulled the carpet out on so much shit, like...
Yeah. I mean, like we were talking about before the show, we knew something was coming because they said, you know, the talk of the reset and all of that nonsense. So we knew that something was coming. And we've seen them do massive layoffs in previous years. Like the one last year is the one I remember pretty badly that like...
That was like, Microsoft-wide. Yeah. That wasn't just Xbox. So I think yeah. Xbox...
And this one is Microsoft-wide as well. Like there's like another few thousand that got let go around the rest of the org, not just Xbox. But Xbox is the majority of it.
The numbers are so staggering.
Yeah, 1,600 now and another 1,600 over the next financial year. That's...
It's a crash course in how to destroy morale, man.
Yeah, because if you're like
just sitting there, like, look, if you're working for Obsidian or Bethesda or fucking any of these other studios that Microsoft bought, you're like every other day you are alt tabbing in and like checking out fucking LinkedIn as much as I hate the site and like polishing up your resume. And you know what? You are right to do so. Like you have a very good reason.
The sword of Damocles is over the heads of every single staffer, and that is like you said. Absolutely appalling for morale because people create their best work when they're supported and they're safe and they feel free to. Now they're going to be pushing this. And I'm sure there's internal things pushing them to use Copilot and Token Max, even with the raises in things. Like there's enough Microsoft screwery going around to just, you know, impact these folks. Yeah, and it sucks.
Such a hard, weird swing. Like the problem they had before actually really did seem like they were just kind of like left directionless. It's almost so given to, cause like the thing is management is actually important. It just seems like good managers are actually incredibly hard to come by. Like you want people to like manage a project and like help steer the ship and give meaningful feedback. And sometimes that's going to be an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
But it's not just come in and like fire 50 people in every studio and then.
No. Like the problem is a lot of C-suite people. I don't think like they've come through the trenches of knowing like software or whatever. They've come through with an MBA. I have to refer to the great Ed Zitron for those who are, you know, annoyed at AI stuff. Look him up.
He writes
beautiful takedowns of stuff.
And so he basically one criticism of him though is that he could probably maybe be a little bit less snarky because some of the people who need to read that stuff, he is understandably offending in the way to doing it.
There's one news appearance he did where he wasn't snarky at all. That was really getting things like that. But anyway, but one of the things he postulates is a lot of company like C-suiters are basically know how to do three things these days, and that's hire people, spend money, and fire people. They don't really have the vision, and this I think is what's filtering down. Like a lot of AAA. Is run by people who haven't crawled up through the trenches, right? Like I think ignoring the thing, you know, I'm going to use the example of Iwata here, but like ignoring the difference in the Japanese laws, at least the way I understand them.
There's definitely especially after 5 years, there's definitely a lot more protection.
Yeah. Like there's a lot more protection.
Like everywhere versus America. Like some of the French studios are much better off like, in this as well, actually.
Arcane, like, there's been stuff there that, like, they're undergoing consultation at the moment because of this.
I can't remember the exact wording, but, like, it really read like Microsoft saying, we would really like to fire all these people, but the French government won't let us, is basically. Yeah.
But, like, the thing is, the way I think about it is, like, so ignoring all the Japanese protections, when Iwata had to make moves at Nintendo, it's like, he was a creative before running Nintendo. So there, I feel like he appreciated that view a lot more. Like, yes, there's obviously the Japanese protections, but still caring about the people who make those games and supporting them.
Well, the most successful Japanese companies at the moment are Nintendo and Capcom. And maybe to a lesser extent, Square has finally started to like get its shit together in the last decade. But a big part of what seems to be driving Capcom is like retaining institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
But also, like, they seem to have the teams on a rail. Like, they do seem to be managing them. Like, they seem to, like, have targets, and they're hitting the targets.
Yeah. And I think that it's the institutional knowledge and letting it develop things. Like, the example is, at least up until Skyrim, like, say what you will about the jankiness of the Bethesda games, right? Their teams were able to deliver pretty consistently. Like, because they'd gotten that institutional knowledge of their tools to build Skyrim and Oblivion and the Fallouts and stuff. They sort of had that. But when you're doing these mass firings and you're ripping these teams apart, like, again, we were talking about it in the pre-show, the stuff with id, like, what's going to happen now How like half that studio has been torn asunder.
Yeah, they've
like
said they're throwing that they're keeping the engine alive, but they may have gotten rid of everybody who knows how it really works.
Yeah, you know, they could probably maintain it, but they're not going to be able to extend it or enhance it, and you're probably not going to be able to optimize it as tightly for hardware as they used to be able to do. Which, and again,
if they had gone in with a scalpel, like, because, I mean, it sucks, but sometimes I guess redundancies do actually make sense. Although, when I say redundancy, that also includes, well, you've been here for 10 years, so you are now entitled to this much,
yeah,
this much compensation to help you stay on your feet while you do something else.
Yeah.
Like, you know. But, like, it feels like, it's partly because, I mean, I've had an issue increasingly in the last year or two. I think I've been saying more and more like how much it annoys me that everything on Unreal Engine 5 is starting to look the same. There are exceptions. Yep. Mixtape turned out to be on Unreal Engine 5 and I was like, what the fuck, Keeper? But, you know, Double Fine is very art-forward studio.
Yeah.
I think having that technology is probably a potentially huge deal for them going forward. And they still technically have it, but I think they've lost the ability to make it into something meaningful.
Yep. Like, you look at EA, basically the same thing when they had Renderware, and they bought Criterion and had Renderware. They let that go to waste. What are they doing? Like, they're trying to shove, what's the tech for behind Battlefield?
Frostbite.
Frostbite, yeah.
I remember you that.
Know, they were trying to shove everything onto Frostbite when it probably wasn't best suited to Frostbite.
A whole bunch of studios saying, hey, this isn't a racing game engine, guys. Like, this would be great if we're making a first-person shooter. But
yeah. And even like things like that, it's like you have the tech, have the right things go onto it. But if you're not going to do that, you're not going to maintain those teams. Like, what's the point? And it's like you have the tech, use it, maintain it, save yourself a bunch of development budget by having in-house resources instead of having to go to Epic or whatever else. You know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, the direction Unreal's going is not good. Like.
Yeah.
You see the stuff about Unreal 6. Eh.
A lot of people are like, yeah, this is not taking out people's favorite features. That doesn't seem like that big a jump.
Yeah. And trying to push a lot more metaverse nonsense on it.
It's. I'm big chance of Sony. Get that Decima engine out there. I'm only half joking. I don't know how that goes with a whole bunch of different genres, but it definitely works pretty well for multiple open world games.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what else they've got, but then who knows what else they're going to be.
Like, what is Insomniac using?
I think it's something in-house. I imagine it's in-house to pull that out, but I haven't checked, so. Mm. But then again, look at what they've done. They've just let, you know, they've basically bled Bungie dry, so. After Destiny 2 got shut down, so.
Yeah, it's almost in the months, but current bloodbath is, like, weird. Because I don't want to play, like, pretend like I would be a super genius manager. Because it's easy to remember the stuff we get wrong. But, like, I feel like everybody, when Sony was making all these live service bets, was like, oh, nah, man.
Yeah.
Like, you are, like, this is not going to work.
it's trend chasing, and it's trend chasing that's gone badly for them. Yet, it frustrates me to see that they haven't learned from it. Like, not every game can be a forever game unless you can run on a very small player base. Because
they're trying to make sport, but the problem is once you've got like soccer and football and basketball and whatever and cricket in the world, like there's only at some point everything else becomes a niche.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. Like you can only support so much, right? You can only follow like a few sports each thing unless you're seasonal or unless you're whatever. And making every game for a game just is not going to work on that front. And, like, trend chasing isn't good either. And that's the other thing. Because of the gestation periods of high-end games in this day and age, it just doesn't make sense in terms of the numbers behind actually producing them and expecting them to succeed. You're going to get a lot more Concords, whether you like it or not. And
weird thing actually here is that I feel like in the last year and a half, like a lot of these Xbox acquisitions had started to finally bear fruit. Like it had taken way too long, but like it's finally happening.
Yeah.
Like if you had this if you have this energy at a turn of a generation, you have a chance to, like, really catch up.
They, like, there's a lot of things where it's like, yeah, they, and that's the problem when you're running by people who only see the numbers, who only see spreadsheets, who don't understand the creative process and the way games come out. And I think the problem is there's a lot of people who, a lot of the money people who expected game production to be very rote, or maybe they expect it to be less messy than it is, and not really understanding it. And now they pull out, and all the stuff contracts, and that's what we've got right now. And it's like, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to see what a solution is here, because it's like, does AAA need to just implode? Like, but then how do you rebuild a thing from a lower level? Like, and then you're going to be at a bigger mess.
I mean, part of our Everything is Garbage episode from earlier this year did actually focus around the cost of just core fundamental components.
Yeah.
And this is a huge problem, like, just generationally. You're not going to get... So the typical lifespan of a console is starts off as a boutique item, boutique slash enthusiast item, becomes more of just an enthusiast item in like year two. But after year two, you know, you're supposed to get priced down, and like, you know, parents are buying it for their kids and like,
yeah,
mass market. Imagine like if the PS5 and Xbox Series had followed that trajectory, like if PS5 was, you know, $200 less than its launch price right now. Where we would be at, and like that's a problem you just can't fix. Ironically, somebody from the AI sector in Microsoft is now in charge of Xbox. So it's kind of her fault that they cannot afford to make Xboxes.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing is that their statement that came out when they announced that all of this business was happening was like, yeah, because there are hardware, because there are factors out of our control, but it's like, it's factors from other divisions of your monopoly company.
You are part of the
problem. Yeah.
At least, I mean, I hate that I let myself be happy for this, but like at least Double Fine looks like they're going to be okay for the meantime.
Yeah.
And I've like realized, like, I think there was somebody somewhere in that company who was like, you need a small PR win.
Yeah.
Let a couple of the studios go and let them, because they get to keep their IP as well.
Yeah.
I would love somebody to do the research and tell me when can I actually buy Double Fine games again and have the money go to Double Fine specifically. I really want to know that, because I will buy Keeper in a heartbeat once I know where the money is, that the money is going where I want it to go.
Like, the one thing that just annoys me a lot is the way Ninja Theory got treated with that, you know. Senua game that got announced at
I can see SG. the logic of let them get it out there, let it be seen, but it also like just seems gross at the same time. Like, I can see how it would be helpful that like they got that trailer out there, but it's also like, come on, like really?
Like, I could, like, yeah, no, because you're right on that front. Like, have a go out there, but like at the same point, it's like if they'd been like, hey, this is what the studio's working on, like privately to potential.
Like,
people
could have like helped if they were really supportive. They could have like shopped it around for them.
Yeah,
The thing that I guess gets me is like there is no scalpel here. This was just a sledgehammer. Like,
yeah,
all this talk about like trying to learn the business. And here's the weird thing: I still do believe that like you don't. It helps, but you don't have to come from game development. But you do have to respect it and have an active interest in learning.
Yeah.
And they made a show of that for a little bit, but clearly not enough.
Yeah, not enough. And it felt like when they were showing it, it was just the facade. That's just like, yeah, you know, I don't expect the people running game companies to be hardcore, blah, blah, blah. But like I said, you just got to respect that process and understand that it's a creative medium and it's a bit messier than other kind of things. But
your job is managing people. You need to understand how these people work. That's a...
Yeah.
That's really why you're being paid the big bucks. If you can do that well, then you've earned it.
Yeah, and like realistically, these people aren't earning that money that they get, because they're not managing, they're not supporting, they're not building, they're just raising stuff to the ground.
The process line goes up. Like at the end of the day, the job is to like appease the stock market for the next quarter.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's cancerous, and at some point,
it seems like it's fast spiraling to like a crash. Like,
I mean, again, I think there's a wider tech crash coming. because of just all the stuff around AI.
Yeah, well, I mean, if nobody can afford it, like, you know, Apple relies on people upgrading their phone every 2 years, like...
Yeah. I mean, like, Apple is suing OpenAI for basically massive industrial...
Wasn't that, theft. Like, a hiring process thing? Like, they're just trying to get Apple employees
to... it's basically part of the suit. I will link it to you privately because the court documents are out there. One guy basically left Apple, didn't return his gear, like his work-provided laptop, exploited a security flaw to steal basically corporate espionage information and relay it to OpenAI.
Wow. And Apple is a big enough company where that suddenly matters. But yeah, the one thing I do actually want to, like, as garbage list, the one thing I do relate back to this is, don't forget OBS. I kind of hope Microsoft at least understands at least some of their sales problems are coming from here. This is the reason I have not bought an Xbox game in like the last 2 years. It's why I just keep on. This is more than anything is why I am waiting for Double Fine to like break free so I can buy that fucking stuff again.
There are definitely Xbox published games that I would like to buy, but I do not want to because I do not want to support them.
I would encourage anybody to not buy them. But again, this is why discs are important, because if you do find a used copy of Indiana Jones or Ninja Gaiden or whatever, then by all means buy that. If you have if you have a free sample of Games Pass, it'd be a great chance to sign up and then not renew.
Yeah. Like, I would support those games because I want to play them, but it's just like, I just don't want to give Microsoft money.
It's like, well, yeah, I mean... It's a bit sad because it's not Xbox's fault directly, but to break this down, it's basically like, hey, Microsoft is giving AI surveillance to a genocide state. Maybe they should stop.
Yeah.
You can't ask people to not use Windows. Like, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Even if your heart's really there, like, how many people are going to feel comfortable installing Linux? Like, the amount of difficulty it's going to cause with work at home PCs and things is just too ingrained. But Xbox is a target. It's like, okay, that's a luxury recreational item. That is something you can go without, and you might have to do something else for fun, but you know, it's not destroying your OS reliability.
Yes.
So more than anything else, that is still why I would discourage people from buying any Xbox game, but they've sure given another reason to like add to like angry letters if you were canceling a Games Plus subscription or something. Just pile it on there. I mean, let's face it, it's clear that Usher Sharma was bought in because like who is willing to be psychotic enough? I don't know she's getting paid. I'm assuming like we'll give you a bonus of like $1 million to just do this.
Just wind it down. That's honestly what I think long term.
I'm not sure Xbox is going to exist a decade from now.
No, I would absolutely agree. I do not. I would say I would be surprised if it was around in 5 years.
And that's even moving on from the cost of components creating a problem. Even assuming that this bubble bursts and like RAM becomes affordable again in 2 years from now, and like new consoles can come out at $500 instead of $1,000.
Yeah.
The state that's in right now, it's like, and that's I guess the last thing they wrapped down is like it's weird. Like did they try like bundling up studios and like selling them to like other like places where they would like maybe be a good fit? Or
they have not, as far as I know, they haven't tried that. At least said anything about that publicly. They might be trying that now, but I don't.
But now they're selling damaged goods. Like a full service id is probably a hard sell, but it is a saleable sell. I want to say,
yeah. Like if you could, if they have tried it, nothing's been said about it, which makes sense. There'd be a lot of NDAs or whatever in terms of those, in terms of those negotiations. But yeah, I haven't heard anything come through. But yeah, I think you're right. It's going to get harder to try and sell those studios that have been gutted as badly as they have.
Yeah, so much of the value is actually in the talent.
Yeah,
We didn't expect this episode to end happy. It has not.
It's a pretty grim time.
Yeah, I noticed friends over at Nextlander, formerly Giant Bomb, been noted recently that Vinny Caravella used to say, never been a better time to play video games, and he has not said that in a while now. Which says a lot, because it's actually still a pretty good time. If you can ignore all the politics behind the scenes, it's actually a pretty good time to be playing games if you were in a bubble.
Yeah, we're getting great games. And that's one of the things that sucks through all this period of this massive upheaval. There are fantastic games being released by hardworking people who deserve to be treated better.
5 years from now, I'm not so sure it's going to happen anymore. Like, I think we're in like a huge hurrah. Sucks because I would like to have jobs, and I would also like to play this stuff that they make in the future. Yeah.
Like, yeah, if you like, you know, if you're like, it's good seeing the unionization stuff springing up in the States. I know there's stuff here. I haven't really been able to afford the dues. Otherwise, I'd probably look into it for myself. GWA here, but yeah, like, you know, I see all the stuff. Around the Rockstar case, the union busting that did. And
like that's kind of a depression of how bad it is, because like Rockstar does not need to. Game is gonna make much money.
That game's gonna make bank. But yeah, like the fact that there are UK politicians saying, "Yeah, you need to, you know, this is not on," I think is encouraging in some ways, despite everything else going on.
And we have discussed, we are at the point of our opinion of UK politicians, is we're now actually rooting for a garbage bin in one specific case. So, anyway, we'll wrap it up there. Rob, thank you very much for like coming and joining us, because, you know, we had more people, but then, you know, other emergencies happened. It's just a garbage time.
It's garbage. So, yeah, emergencies are pretty much part of that. So it's all good as always.
Anything new coming up in the next week or two?
Nothing on the site. I may have a video out. It won't be up by the time the pod is out, but there'll be a video in a couple of weeks from my end on the YouTube side of things.
Before the month is done, I guess.
Before the month is done, yeah.
And I believe it's Rob Cap at the Blue Skies.
Yep.
Right, in my case, I am pretend beard at the Blue Skies, even though my beard is starting to come. I was pretty clean shaven a week ago, and it's like, it's coming in nicely. But also, I do, obviously have the denture attack review, which, if I have my dates correctly, it's probably going to be out maybe a day before this episode goes live. Too long didn't read. It's pretty good. Give it a go.
Yeah, it looks interesting, and it'll run on my potato. So that's
something. Oh, your Steam Deck. It'll definitely run on your Steam Deck.
Yeah, my PC's just above mid spec. So
but the Steam Deck has really nice analog sticks.
Yeah,
I really like how those feel. In my early, like, ROG LA versus Steam Deck. It was actually the price rise of the Steam Deck and the inability to get it at the time, so I actually think that